It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
Modern Las Vegas is home to many artists who are performing in residency, including Adele, Bruno Mars, and Garth Brooks. But the concept of a residency in Las Vegas for popular performers goes back to 1944. That's right, 1944. Everything old is new. Not even again, according to my guest, writer, photographer, artist, and philanthropist, Michael Shulman. He wrote a comprehensive history of residency, the entertainment residency in Las Vegas, for his website, shulmansays.com. And for everything about Michael, you can go to that same website, shulmansays.com, shulmansays.com, and follow him on all social media. This article was originally published in Business Traveler in August 2023. And Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ira. Nice to be back.
Thanks. It's been a few years, and I wanted to have you on because I found the article intriguing. Most of us don't think about it as a old phenomenon, more as a relatively new phenomenon. But
and it's interesting. Sorry for cutting you off.
No, but that's fine.
Part of the reason for that, and it's a wonderful reason, most of the reason for that is when people think of Las Vegas residencies, they start with Celine Dion and go forward.
Right.
And Celine changed everything. And the person responsible for Celine changing everything was her husband and manager, Rene Angelil. And it was his idea to take Celine's showmanship and combine it with Franco Dragone's production, who had previously done O and Cirque du Soleil, and fuse the two together. And so when most people think of the Las Vegas residency, they start in the 1990s. But as you were starting to get into, it goes back a half a century prior to that.
Were you surprised about that, Michael, that when you started researching for your article?
Was I surprised that it went back that far? No, because I love popular culture, and I love Elvis and the Rat Pack and Liberace, and that triumvirate is where the Las Vegas residency show really got its start. When Las Vegas first opened, you had big acts coming out like Jimmy Durante and people like that, but they would only do a few nights here and a few nights there. And Liberace was really the one who got it started. Not only that, by the 1970s, I believe, he was the highest paid entertainer in the world based on his residency show, which was paying him the equivalent in today's dollars of about $1.5 million a week, 16 weeks a year.
And that was at the Las Vegas Hilton.
It was.
All right. He was a fascinating entertainer. And I think people's perception of him keeps changing from decade to decade. You really get a sense of his talent in the performing arts and how he goes back, as you say, to the 40s. And I always remember growing up watching him even in the 50s, where he would perform on television with his brother, George.
Oh, my mother talks about watching the Liberace show with her grandmother. And she was like, nobody thought he was gay. My grandmother's like, oh, he's such a nice young man. His mother lives with him and blah, blah, blah. And I remember once 15, 20 years ago, I had a birthday and a bunch of people came in from New York. And we decided to go to the Liberace Museum. Now, I should point out that this group was mostly out of drag queens hungover the morning after a big party. And we almost got kicked out of the Liberace Museum because the docents at the Liberace Museum had no sense of humor when it came to Liberace. Now, nobody had a bigger sense of humor about Liberace than Liberace.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
And a bunch of out of drag, hungover drag queens were going to pick right up on. They were going to go straight for the world's largest rhinestone, and they were going to walk. And so there was this movie, it was a loop in black and white film of Liberace by the pool. And he's like, I love having the kids come over and swim in the pool. And da 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 da. And I remember Lady Bunny being like, you bet you do, you old queen. And this woman comes over in like her sequin piano key tie. It's like, I'm sorry, you can't talk about Mr. Liberace like that. And we were like, is she for real? And then there were these two little old ladies. They must have been like from Okie Fenokie or Kalamazoo. They're like stage whispering, but they thought they were whispering. You know, Knipple, they say he was gay, but I don't believe it. And we're all like, sequin pom-poms on his socks. What aren't you understanding? Like, it was mind-boggling. But yes, he, as a matter of fact, when the Neon Museum opened up, the opening night, I remember going up to Alex Epstein and saying, dibs on the Liberace Museum sign. And she was like, for real? And I'm like, yeah, it's great. It's small. It's not the Stardust sign. I'm not Boyd Gaming. Neither is my family. Right. But we can do this small sign and it's pink and gay and fabulous and bring it on. She was like, great, fantastic. Which is how the Liberace Museum sign got refurbished at the Neon Museum.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, for those listeners and viewers who have not been to the Neon Museum or some of the other great museums in Las Vegas, please go because there's a lot of history there. No doubt about it.
It's also inherently Vegas-y.
Yes, very much.
And yeah, you learn a lot about Vegas history at the Neon Museum. I can't say enough great things about it. And we'll get into residencies in a minute, but there are so many great museums that have come to Las Vegas. We have the Punk Rock Museum. We have the new Las Vegas Museum of Art that Heather Harmon is leading with Elaine Wynn and Michael Govan from LACMA. That's going to be down in Symphony Park. It was just announced today in the LA Times.
Nice.
And just these wonderful organizations that are expanding the way people look at culture in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we have to include the Mob Museum as one of those.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. Well, yeah. Another inherently Vegas-y thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't get that anywhere else. It's true. So I was just thinking that when you look at the history of the residency, starting with who we just were talking about, Liberace, that the number of performers that have had residencies, and I know it's a broad term, so if you wouldn't mind explaining the concept to anybody who doesn't quite know what that means.
It's interesting, and I'm going to use a metaphor for this that AEG and Live Nation are probably not going to enjoy, but anybody who has killed multiple people is considered a serial killer. Any person who performs in the same venue over and over over a certain amount of time is considered a resident artist, whether that's Billy Joel performing once a month, every month at Madison Square Garden in New York, or whether it's Dita Von Teese performing for 3 months at the Crazy Horse in Paris, or Britney Spears at Planet Hollywood, it's a residency show. Now, it so happens that Las Vegas is the residency city, if you will. Because the casinos had the budget to pay for entertainers to come out and do whatever. And it wasn't only singers. I mean, Don Rickles had a residency that went on for decades.
Right.
And
we're like the residency capital of the world.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. And could you explain, before you even get into further detail, just why it's important? Because you talk about it in the article, the importance, and you're quoting several experts, the importance of entertainment to Las Vegas and specifically some of the resorts or casinos in terms of how they differentiate themselves by having certain kinds of entertainers.
That has changed.
Yes, especially in the old days where they were able to attract high rollers or whales.
Absolutely. So the reason the Rat Pack was so revered from the casino side and why they were given so many passes on so many things that other people would have been like, you can't do that, was because they brought in the whales. And for anybody who's not familiar with Vegas parlance, a whale is a high roller. It's very simple. And what the Rat Pack did was they brought in a lot of high rollers. Liberace, and he was the first person to tell you this, he brought in a lot of the wives and mothers of the high rollers. The high rollers weren't going to see Liberace. They would be in the casino and their wives and mothers and whoever would go see him. That was his crowd. Elvis was more the girlfriends and daughters until he was older and at the Hilton. But Elvis's first residency was a flop at the Last Frontier. Mm-hmm. I think he was there for about a week and a half or 2 weeks. It opened and closed with nary a boo and a blurb. And Liberace was one of his first champions here in Las Vegas.
And it's funny how that works, because that was one residency entertainer promoting another soon to be a residency entertainer.
Absolutely. And yeah. Colonel Tom Parker, Elvis's manager.
And the famous dancing chicken bidder. For those who may get the reference, if maybe not.
was very interested in having Elvis at the International, which became the Las Vegas Hilton. But he didn't want to be the first one there. He didn't want Elvis to be the first act. And so they ended up getting Barbara Streisand to do the opening in the International showroom. And they had Peggy Lee in the lounge for a year, a 2-year residency, I believe. And even back then, you're talking $1 million contracts. And just, I mean, the amount of money now would just almost make your head spin. And this is when Barbara Streisand was still shopping in thrift stores and buying sailor suits and doing whatever. The Rat Pack was brought to Las Vegas by a man named Jack and Trotter, who was probably the greatest entertainment director in the history of Las Vegas, certainly the most storied. He originally ran the Copacabana in New York and came out to Las Vegas for the Sands and built the Copa Room. In tandem, had hired the Rat Pack, and that was where they went. And the Rat Pack, as we think of it now, is not who the Rat Pack was originally. The Rat Pack was originally a group that hung out with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall. Among them were Frank Sinatra and Peter Lawford and Dean Martin. In my opinion, hands down, the most talented guy of the bunch was Sammy Davis Jr. But then they did Ocean's 11 and so on and so forth. And mm-hmm. Sands became the white hot epicenter of entertainment in Vegas.
Do you think that the concept, I always use that term concept, but I'll get away from it so I don't have to repeat myself. But do you think that the residency of an artist from a business standpoint, not necessarily the artistic point of view, is good for both the casino and the artist? Does it work out in terms of numbers for most of the entertainers?
Well, for the casino side, first of all, nothing in Las Vegas happens on a whim. Everything, especially these days where everything is run by multi-million and billion-dollar organizations, very little is left to chance on the casino side. So the casino, much like in the actual casino itself, where the casino is going to win in the long run, there's just no way around it. They don't sign $100 million contracts unless they know they're going to be butts in seats, period. It just does not happen. For the artist, it means they don't have to load up and load out in a different city every night, and their fans from all over the world will come and see them. And it's really that simple. I had one friend of mine, who at the time was the chief commercial officer and creative officer and marketing officer for Caesars Entertainment, that told me his sweet spot for residency artists was a mother, sometimes a single mom, sometimes a married mom, with kids not yet in their teens who lived in Los Angeles. And they could bring their kids. They could be here 3 nights a week. They could go back. They could go back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that was his sweet spot when looking for whatever. And if you look at the people that they had at that time, it was Britney Spears and Jennifer Lopez and people like that who were all moms, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, it's that balancing act from the entertainer's point of view of if you have kids or family and you can cut down on your travel and limit the amount of, as you said, load in and load out, that makes it really nice from that point of view. And plus, Vegas is, again, a very unique city. Again, I always marvel, even after all these decades, that we're in the middle of the desert where all this stuff is.
And yet we're also in the middle of the country, and it's very convenient to get to major cities like
absolutely
New York, Dallas, right, LA, Miami, what have you.
Right. But you mentioned something earlier, Michael, that people will come in to see the entertainer as opposed to the entertainer having to come to.
That's where the shift occurred.
Yeah.
So there were a few great shifts. Originally, again, it was to bring in the high rollers. It was an amenity, just like having a steakhouse or a Japanese restaurant as time went on. And The theory being that when you eventually threw $50 into a slot machine, it would be at that property where you were staying and so on and so forth. And the entertainers were an amenity. Now, and again, this started with Celine and moving forward, because prior to the 90s, Las Vegas had pretty much become an entertainment wasteland. And Cher said it was where great acts went to die. Or something to that effect.
Right. Yeah.
And,
she was wrong.
And, it was with Celine, and then for Generation X, but for the people younger than that, Britney Spears was the second person who completely changed the paradigm, because for once the star attraction was not aimed towards baby boomers or Generation X, but toward millennials, and then the people coming after. Some of these residencies are some of the most gorgeous productions you will ever see. Jennifer Lopez, in my opinion, still ranks as probably the most beautifully produced residency show I'd ever seen. It was just spectacular. It was like being at the Fountain Blue in the 1950s, and it was just, her hair had its own choreographer. And she was sliding on her knees to the edge of the stage and grabbing people's hands and doing costume changes. And she came out on a train and she sat in a huge tambourine, like doing a Celia Cruz tribute. I mean, it was just incredible. Britney's concerts were like being on the set of one of her music videos. And now you have like Christina Aguilera, who, while I wasn't particularly fond of her residency at Planet Hollywood, what she's doing at Voltaire now at the Venetian is exhilarating, because it is a much more intimate venue. And she is able to dance and sing and perform amongst the audience. And it's really fantastic. Kelly Clarkson, who is a more recent Las Vegas residency artist, might have had the most wonderful connection with an audience I have ever seen in Las Vegas. She was so authentic and so genuine, and she went out into the crowd and she was talking with people in the show. And yes, a lot of artists do that now, but she was like, oh my God, I just caught a whiff of myself. I need to change my deodorant. This is horrible. I mean, like, but every night, and a lot of people have kind of their three funny lines they do. I love Cher, but if you've seen Cher's show once, you've seen Cher's show once. And she has some funny lines, and you can lip sync along with them the eighth or ninth time you've seen the show. And again, there's no diminishing return on the Cher show. It's one of the best shows in the world. I highly recommend it. Kelly Clarkson changed her set list and her patter every single night of her residency. Fish, who just concluded a residency at the Sphere, changed their set list every single night because they knew their audience is diehard and people were likely to come into town and attend two, three, or four nights of their show. And so they had a different set list for every single night. And I don't mean like they swapped one song for another. I mean, it was an entire, they have so many songs they do that it's uncountable at this point. But everybody I know that went was like, oh, Thursday night was totally different than Friday, which made Saturday totally seem like incredible. And then Sunday was amazing. And I'm like, okay. And that's important because as a Las Vegas local, the best, most successful shows, especially since every Las Vegas local has become a de facto concierge, and every tourist who comes to Las Vegas these days has at least one or two people they know in Vegas, and they go where they tell them to go. So they need to have a little bit of what I call go-back ability. Elton John, Diana Ross, Lionel Richie, Cher, these artists whose songs have become the soundtrack to our lives, in our heads, in our car, whatever. There is no limit on how many times you can go back and see them. They're kind of like the Beatles' Love by Cirque du Soleil. In that, if I have people in from out of town, they're like, hey, we're going to see Love. Do you want to come with us? I'm like, sure. Some shows, as gorgeous as they are, you just can't sit through them a fifth or a sixth time. And as you live here for a number of years, that's what you're asked to do. And it becomes difficult. So I applaud these shows that make them fun and unique and change them up. And some of them are just, John Legend is a wonderful example of somebody who the production value was just gorgeous. And everything about it was just a luxurious experience watching this man perform and play the piano and dance and sing. And this gorgeous wardrobe curated by Dave Thomas, and everything about it was just the very highest level of production that you can get. And it's wonderful seeing things like that, because people don't necessarily think of Las Vegas as the best of the best in certain things. And entertainment wise, you can't hold a candle to it.
Right. It's the same with dining now in Las Vegas, or 20 years ago.
Or shopping.
Yeah. Or retail, any of that stuff.
I remember one weekend, Diana Ross, Elton John, and Cher were all opening on the same night. And it was like a gay Sophie's Choice. I didn't know what to do. And I'd seen all of them like 5 or 6 times or 10 times at that point. I'm like, pulling out what little hair I have left, being like, oh my God, do I see Cher or Elton or Diana Ross? I just don't know.
So instead you went
to Lotus of Siam. I'm pretty sure I defaulted to Cher, but I don't recall.
So instead you went to Lotus of Siam and forgot the shows.
So. There was no shame in the Lotus of Siam game either.
Yeah, there you go. There's something you said, I want to paraphrase you paraphrasing Cher, which was, she said, or you said, she said, that perform, and I remember the quote, that performers come to Vegas to die, and yet she keeps coming and performing. So clearly she's not dead.
Well, one of the greatest lines about Cher ever that she has repeated, that I believe was originally coined by Jimmy James, was, after the nuclear holocaust, there will be two things, cockroaches and Cher. just saying that until, as long as there's a breath in her body, she will throw on some Bob Mackie spangled costumes and one of her wigs and get out there and sing for you. And she is legitimately funny and entertaining and indefatigable. But yes, in the 1970s, after she had split up from Sonny, after the TV show was over, so actually early 80s, late 70s, she was performing here. Tina Turner was performing here. But this is when they didn't have a major label behind them, and their careers were in different areas than they were. Well, in Tina's case, were past tense. Cher still is. She's an icon. She's, I think, in the Guinness book for the artist, only artist with a top 10 single in every decade since the 90s or 60s, whenever Sonny and Cher was. It was book.
So that would have been, yeah, that would have been, I think, middle to late 60s.
So 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, aughts, and 2010s. She had a top 10 or even a number one. I don't recall what it was, but it's something like that.
In your multi-part series, which is available again on your website, michaelshulmansays.com, what was the most surprising thing you discovered in your research?
The most surprising thing I discovered in my research was that Elvis's first residency flopped. That was very interesting to me. And this was something that Jason Gasworth, who at the time was the president of entertainment for Caesars Entertainment, pointed out. And that was just how strong country has come into the Las Vegas arena, which country music has always been a thing. The rodeo has always been huge here. There is no loss for people in cowboy hats and belt buckles and what have you. As a matter of fact, once I saw Dolly Parton at Caesars, because when they first built the Coliseum, it was for Celine. And Celine worked every day. Well, 5 nights a week, which nobody can do that. And so after a few months, they were like, we need to give this woman a break. Like, she's going to like come out on stage and fall over. And so they're like, you need to take a vacation and we're going to have somebody else here for a little while. And they had Gloria Estefan for a couple of weeks. And then during the rodeo, they had Dolly Parton. And I went, besides being one of the greatest shows I've ever seen, the audience was pretty much broken up into thirds between cowboys and rodeo people, motorcycle, leather-clad, Sunset Strip-type rockers, and gays and drag queens. And those three, and all mixed together in the Coliseum. And I just remember sitting there being like, This is the most bizarre. I mean, again, only in Las Vegas are you going to have these three very disparate groups being like, oh my God, isn't this great? Oh, this is fantastic. Like dancing with each other and doing whatever. And it was fantastic.
When casinos look at, and you meant we talked about this earlier, when casinos look at signing someone for a residency, it's not just the paying of the performer over X amount of time, whether they perform once a week, once a month, every night, as Celine did, et cetera. But there's also the cost of the production itself and not just the performer's salary. So are they looking at that? And because some productions are clearly much more expensive than other productions in a residency format. So in other words, you can have a headliner. The headliner has minimal production, not a lot of scenery, not a lot of dancers, not a lot of other effects, and others do. How do they work that out? Were you able to get a sense of that?
The party line is that all of it is up to the artist. The venue, the casino, and the promotion company and the touring company defer to the artist's opinions, vision, the artist's vision. And whether it is somebody, they go out and they hire these incredible creative directors and producers. There are two in particular, a gentleman named Baz Halpin and a gentleman named Raj Kapoor, who are the very top of their field. And they don't just do Las Vegas residencies. They do the Academy Awards and the Super Bowl halftime show and things like that.
Yeah, so little things like that.
These are the very best production designers and producers in the world. As a matter of fact, Baz Halpin is one of the producers of Awakening at the Wynn. Again, just an incredible spectacle show.
But does that money come from the artist budget side, or does it come from the casino or resort side? In other words, hiring the...
I don't have a definitive answer for that, and I think it changes by the time, but I'm willing to bet it's part of the package that is allotted to this residency, of which the artist keeps a certain amount, their management keeps a certain amount, and they would then pay for that, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Is there anyone else other than the only one I could think of, and you would know more better than me, is there anyone else besides Barry Manilow who performed in a residency, left for several years, and then came back? I'm talking about the Las Vegas Hilton.
Elton John.
I'm sorry?
Elton John used to be at the MGM Grand with Billy Joel for years. They had an ongoing residency. I think it was a couple weekends a month that they would do for like 6 months in a row, and then they'd come back the next year and do a few more. Until when, again, Celine, they were just like, you're going to work yourself into a grave, because her work ethic is unprecedented. Nobody can work at the level Celine does with the frequency she has and live. I mean, it's almost beyond human
in a sense.
And after they rewrote history with her show, A New Day, John Nelson, who I quote in the article, who's the senior vice president of AEG Presents Las Vegas, said all credit goes to Renee. It was Renee's idea. Renee is the one who pitched it. It was his vision. And after that huge success, they repeated it with Elton John's Red Piano Show. And from there, they brought in Bette Midler, and then they brought in Cher. And I remember thinking at the time, this is the gayest lineup I have ever heard in my entire life. Somewhere Liberace's ghost is cackling right now. The only thing you're missing is ABBA to have the A, B, C, D, and E of the gayest entertainers on the planet, or at least the gayest audiences on the planet. And yet, it was Las Vegas, so the audiences weren't gay. But when you hear Cher, Bette Midler, Elton John, you're like, for real? And Celine?
Gotcha.
Again, I was not complaining. I was just thoroughly amused.
Right. Final question before I let you go. What do you see as the future of residencies in Las Vegas in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
I think what Voltaire is doing at the Venetian and what the Wynn does at the Encore Theater cannot be overlooked. There is something about seeing these artists, to use the Encore Theater as an example, because Voltaire right now is basically Kylie Minogue and Christina Aguilera with their Belle de Nuit ensemble. in the Encore Theater, you have Lionel Richie and Robbie Williams from the UK and Harry Connick Jr. I mean, these are artists that can fill out stadiums, but they do it in a 1500 seat theater where even the very last seat in the balcony in the back row is closer to the stage than almost any other theater in town. Mm-hmm. It's insane, in the most wonderful way. I think that intimacy is where things are going to go. But who knows? I am neither Live Nation, nor am I AEG Presents, nor do I own a casino. So nobody's really beating a path to my door asking my two cents, except
well, I just did. Yeah.
Thank you. And as I jokingly say, my two cents are worth about a penny and a half. If one of the things that I found that was most interesting was the head of residency shows for Live Nation telling me that they get calls all the time for people that are like, I want to do a residency, because they are always keeping the phone lines open and the communication. Sure. And a lot of people are like, oh, I'm just about to release my new album. She's like, no, that's not when I want you to do a residency show. I want you to do your tour. I want you to wait a little bit, see how many of the songs are hits, blah, blah, blah. Then come to me for your residency, because if you're, it's a different person than the person who's touring in promotion of an album. And again, I don't think you can stress just how integral country music has become to the Las Vegas residency show. Whether it's Luke Bryan or Carrie Underwood at Resorts World or Garth Brooks, who's now doing his second residency. His first, of course, was at the Wynn. And so you have Garth. Miranda Lambert just wrapped up her Velvet Rodeo tour, which was gorgeous. That was another Raj Kapoor production. Shania Twain is back for like her fifth residency. Mm-hmm. She's fantastic. There is no end in sight for the Las Vegas residency show. And that bodes well for all of us.
And that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been writer, photographer, artist, and philanthropist. That's not easy to say, philanthropist. Michael Shulman. For everything about Michael, go to shulmansays.com. That's shulmansays.com. And you can follow him on all social media platforms. What's that, Michael?
Get into it.
Oh, yeah, get into it. Yeah. Michael, thanks for being again on the show.
My pleasure.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah,